Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, a terrific Tuesday to you. Glad that you're joining me today on the Cale Clark Show. It's September the 13th. It's going to be a lucky 13. It's going to be a good show, I think. You can call in right now. Well, you'll be the judge of that, I guess. But you can call in right now and tell me what you think. It hasn't even started yet, but you can still call in. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Producer Jim was saying that he once tried a kale smoothie and it was terrible. But I hope this show will be a kale smoothie with a C, C-A-L-E. And by the way, that's how you spell my name. And that's the email address too, C-A-L-E at relevantradio.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. That's the only right way to spell it. Just kidding. Apologies to all you Clark with a K people out there. And the show account on Twitter is at Cale Clark Show. Got some really cool stuff to talk about today. Something I'm going to talk about later in the show is what do you do when you have to make a decision? And sometimes this is a really, really big life decision, but there really is no roadmap. Certainly nothing in the Bible that tells you what you should do, or even in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It's not covered by Scripture, not covered by sacred tradition. It's a problem in your life. You've got to figure it out. I'll call them wild problems. And in fact, that's the title of a new book that I recently read, and it's one of the best books I've read in the past 5 years. So I'm going to talk about that, time permitting, tonight. A new book called Wild Problems kind of deals with all that. And we do have a lot of wild problems in life. And this is going to be, I think, a wild show. But I want to start off with today's saint. We're about faith, facts, and fun on the Cale Clark Show. And yesterday we kind of spat a lot of fats. Well, fats and facts. I can't even talk right now. But it was a big fat show. And I'll tell you what, Preston Alex was on to talk about money matters. If you missed the episode, do check the podcast. There was a lot of great info that was shared. So those are the facts, and we'll share more facts for sure. But we're going to talk about some faith stuff with today's saint of the day for the first few minutes, and that is Saint John Chrysostom. And we're also about fun on the Cale Clark Show. I want to tease some fun that's coming your way tomorrow, Lord willing, either tomorrow or Thursday. I'm going to be joined by a very special guest, none other than our own Patrick Madrid. That's right, Relevant Radio's own Patrick Madrid, who, of course, operates in the morning most of the time on Relevant Radio. But as producer Jim said, we're going to have a little PM in the PM. Patrick Madrid will be joining me on the Cale Clark Show either tomorrow or Thursday, if we can get him to, you know, if he can work me into his busy schedule. We're going to be able to do this, and I know that he will. I know he'll make time for me. He's a friend. He's a good dude. And he's written a very, very good book called Inquisition. And yes, that is a pun. You might have heard about this book. We're giving it away for free at relevantradio.com and on the app. Just click on the banner, and you can get your own free copy. And I want him to come in tonight so we could talk about Trivia Tuesdays, some questions from his book. It's kind of a Q&A quiz book. It's really cool. I'm really enjoying it, I got to tell you. But he had a prior engagement, so we couldn't have Trivia Tuesday with Patrick Madrid. But we're going to try to have What's the Answer Wednesday. Is that catchy? Probably not. Okay, I'm sorry about that. Or maybe third. We'll get him in there. We'll get him in there. That's for sure. Well, just wanted to tease that to you. Once again, the phone number to call is 888-914-9149. All right. So Saint John Chrysostom is today's saint. Now, if you don't know about this guy, you really should. He's a cool saint. He's one of my very, very favorites. And by the way, Chrysostom is not his last name. Technically, he's John of Constantinople, because that's where he grew up, in modern-day Turkey. Obviously, that was the key epicenter of the western part of the empire, the Roman Empire, that is. Chrysostom is Greek for the golden mouth, the golden mouth. And essentially, that doesn't mean he had a bunch of gold teeth, like a rap star or a boxer or something like that. No. He was a great preacher, one of the best the church has ever produced. So eloquent. I'll tell you what, he used that golden mouth to speak the truth, unvarnished, uncorrupted, pure gold came out of his mouth. I'll tell you that. And we're going to talk to you about him. Now, by the way, he died on this. Well, actually, no, he did. People dispute this. Some people think he died today. His feast day is today. And usually, very often with a saint, the day of their death is kind of their heavenly birthday. And that turns out to be the feast day for them, unless it's surpassed by some greater feast. And I'll tell you what, a lot of people think that he actually died tomorrow, on the 14th of September. Of course, that's the Feast of the Exaltation of the Holy Cross, so that's a pretty big feast day. So maybe he got bumped. I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of this. But he did die on either the 13th or the 14th, most people say the 14th of September in the year 407 A.D. Now, here's something you should know about him. Now, he got this nickname, St. John Chrysostom, about 100 years after he died. And he did deserve that title. And there, by the way, there were a lot of great preachers who could have got that title, who lived during his time. Ambrose of Milan, St. Ambrose of Milan. He, of course, was the great mentor of St. Augustine. We also had Gregory of Nazianzus. We had other great preachers, St. Augustine himself, of course. But in terms of preaching, in terms of homiletics, St. John of Constantinople, better known as St. John Chrysostom, he was head and shoulders above all these guys. And so one thing that's really good about him is that he was a person of integrity. He had many, many opportunities to compromise his integrity and the integrity of the gospel for his own personal gain. And every single time he refused to do so at great cost to himself. But early in life, his vocation was hindered somewhat by his mom. I want to throw this question out there. This is a great listener question that I can ask you. Has a family member, maybe well-intentioned, no malice intended here, but maybe in a well-intentioned way, or maybe not so well-intentioned, has a family member ever hindered the call of God in your life? What's your story? You can call in right now, 888-914-9149. Now, before he became a priest, before he became a bishop, before he became a saint, St. John Chrysostom, his primary vocation was he wanted to be a monk. And actually, before that, he actually was trained to become a lawyer. And then he read what Jesus said in the gospel, "Woe to you lawyers." No, I'm only kidding. No, that's not why. So he was a lawyer. And in fact, he was going to be great. He was going to be like the F. Lee Bailey of his generation. And in fact, his teacher in terms of law, by the way, he grew up in Antioch. Antioch is a city mentioned in the Bible and the Acts of the Apostles. It's the city where the disciples were first called Christians. That's where that name was coined, in Antioch. And so in Syrian Antioch, that's where kind of he grew up. And he was trained by a very famous teacher named Libanius. Libanius. Now, Libanius was a great speaker himself. He was very persuasive. You would want this guy as your defense attorney, okay? He could maybe get you off the hook. But Libanius said actually that, man, I wish John of Constantinople, the future John Chrysostom, man, I wish he would succeed me as the biggest big shot lawyer in the city of Antioch. But it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. He was always asked, like, who should take over for you? Who should take over your law firm of Libanius, you know, Salino and Barnes? I don't know who the other partners were, but Libanius always said, man, the guy I want to take over my counsel, my practice, is John. But here's the problem. He said, the Christians have got a hold of him. The Catholics have got a hold of him. So we cannot have hope for that. And so John, here's where John Chrysostom's mother came in. Now, her name was Anthusa. Now, she was a very, very devout Catholic. And in fact, she loved two things. She loved God, first of all, and then secondly, she loved her son. And her son was the great light of her life. And she was really, really happy when John decided that he wanted to be baptized too. He wanted to officially become a Catholic. So she was a little bit worried that he might go down the secular road. He might get into the law and, you know, start driving a Lamborghini or something like that. And she was really, really happy when he said, I want to be baptized. Now, at the time, he was 20 years old, and it took him 3 years to get through training. Forget about law school. 3 years, that was the length of his RCIA program at the time before he could be baptized. Now, you complain about what you've got going at your local parish, how long it takes people. 3 years he had to commit to this, and that was the time of preparation. And eventually he was baptized by Bishop Miletus of Antioch. And his mother was extremely, extremely happy about this development because things were going. She wanted the best for her son, according to her point of view. And our parents do want the best for us, but sometimes God has other plans that may conflict with them. I don't know if that's true in your case. Has anybody in your family ever kind of hindered the will of God in your life? 888-914-9149. It's a good question for you to answer, so you can call in. 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. So here's what happens. So John gets baptized. His mother, Anthusa, is super happy about this, but he's like, Mom, this is what God wants me to do. He's calling me out of the city. He's calling me out into the desert. He wants me to become a monk. And she basically said, no, he doesn't. No way. And so she actually made him promise that he would never leave her side as long as she was alive. So, wow, that's a tough bargain. You can't leave me ever for any reason until it's my time to go. And John, being the dutiful son, he actually agreed to this. But he tried to have a bit of a hybrid approach, if you will, to his vocation. So he said, okay, I can't leave. I can't be one of the desert monks. Can't leave the city. I got to stay with Mom. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to turn our home into kind of a monastery. I'm going to try to live the life of a monk, the vocation of a monk, in the middle of the world, essentially. And that's kind of intriguing. That's kind of intriguing because, in a sense, I think about St. Jose Maria, the founder of Opus Dei, St. Jose Maria Escrivá. He said, really, what we should try to strive to be is contemplatives in the middle of the world. Now, obviously, not all of us are called to be monks or nuns. Some are, and if that's your vocation, great. That's how you're going to fulfill your. That's how you're going to be most happy. That if you want to be happy, be holy. Another thing St. Jose Maria said, if you want to be happy, be holy. If you want to be even happier, be even holier. If you want to be really, really happy, then be really, really holy. So that comes from following the vocation. It's very difficult to reach the heights that God intends for you, the heights of holiness, without being faithful to your vocation, whatever that may be, whether it's marriage, whether it's something else, many vocations. So this is what John tried to do. He tried to basically live that monastic vocation as best he could in maybe not the greatest circumstance, but he made the best of it. He made the best of it. So he tried to be, in a sense, a contemplative in the middle of the world, living with his mom. And he actually invited three of his buddies to move in as well as roommates. They would like raid the fridge late at night. And they tried to live sort of this monastic community within the home. And eventually his mother was called home to her own eternal reward. And after her death, he went into the mountains of Syria. He left the city of Antioch and he went into the mountains. And so he kind of got training as being a monk. He spent 4 years kind of learning the discipline. And then 2 more years he spent in total solitude. And later on, of course, he did become a bishop. He became a priest first and then a bishop. And he said, you know what? This was great because this is what God wanted me to do. But it wasn't necessarily the best training for what God had for me in the end, because God almost had a call within a call for him. Yeah, I'm calling you to this now, but later on there's going to be something else that's going to come up. And so eventually he was going to have to be a shepherd of souls. And here's what he said in one of his works, which was called On the Priesthood. St. John Chrysostom said, many who have gone from monastic retreat to the active life of the priest or the bishop are completely unable to face the difficulties of their new situation, end of quote. And so throughout history, some monks and some very, very holy hermits were called to ecclesiastical duties. By acclamation, they were made a bishop or something like that. This guy's so holy, he should be our bishop. But they didn't necessarily have the practical skills or the people skills to make that happen. So John maybe struggled with this a little bit. But he didn't necessarily have the greatest people skills, but in a way that did kind of help him too, because he had the gift of not really caring about what people thought of him. I mean, hopefully he wasn't socially ungracious or anything like that, but he didn't give in to what we might call human respect. And this is always a great temptation for us. What will they say? What will they think? If I am adhering to the truth. So St. John Chrysostom, he went back to the city of Antioch after being 4 years in training as a monk in the desert, 2 years in complete solitude. He comes back. He's ordained as a deacon, and then he gets to the next level. You know how there's three levels of ordination. You know those lamps that have three notches of brightness? That's kind of how I see it. The sacrament of holy orders. There's, you know, you get one click and then you become a deacon, you turn it up a little bit and then you become a priest, and then another click and then you're a bishop. Whoa, okay, so that's what's going on here. So he's ordained a deacon and then he becomes ordained a priest after that. Not all deacons, of course, go on to the priesthood. They have the vocation of deacon, whatever. So he becomes a priest or a presbyter, that simply means priest, not too long afterwards. And then he starts preaching, and that's where he really got famous. Words, they didn't have the internet back then, they didn't have Twitter, but if they did, they had Facebook, TikTok, there'd be TikToks of him preaching. People would film him preaching, and they would like spread that all over the internet if they could, because he was so good, so eloquent, and so powerful as a preacher that throughout that region, his fame spread far and wide. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. But he ran up against some problems, as we all do in life, St. John Chrysostom, and he had to confront the materialism of his day. I wonder what he would have said to people of our time. And he eventually a near riot breaks out because of who he is, because of his preaching, because of what he was all about. We've got to take a quick break on the Cale Clark Show, but I'm going to tell you about what happened to him. And I also want you to call in if you ever had a relative, maybe even a well-meaning family member, try to get in the way of God's will for you. How did that happen? What'd you do about it? 888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois life insurance society, not licensed in all states.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
The music kind of reminds me of Tecmo Bowl. Anybody ever played that? That's a classic. Speaking of classics, I don't get any more classic than St. John Chrysostom, the Golden Mouth, the great preacher. We're talking about his life today. And I asked you guys the question, did you ever have a family member that tried to stand in the way of God's will for your life? Because he certainly did. His mother, as well-meaning, as lovely as she was, she said, "You can't become a monk until I pass away. So you're not leaving here, okay?" He's like, "Okay, Mom." So he stayed there. He tried to live the monastic life in the home with some of his buddies. She eventually passed away. He went to the desert, and then he gets called to become a deacon and then a priest, and he starts preaching up a storm, and he is taking the world by storm. And so if you're calling in right now, tell me your story. I do see you. If you're on the line, please stay there. I just want to finish up this little brief anecdote about John Chrysostom's life, and then we're going to get to your phone calls, 888-914-9149. And don't forget, later in the show, God willing, time permitting, we're going to be talking about wild problems that come up in your life. And certainly, here's a wild problem that came up in the life of St. John Chrysostom. Most people, when they become a bishop, they don't get kidnapped right before that, but that's exactly what happened to him. They actually had to kidnap him so that they can make him a bishop. Because the see, and that's what they call the apostolic see, the bishop's seat, the cathedra, that's what that means, the chair of the bishop. Well, that became vacant in Constantinople in the year 397 AD. And so the emperor, the Roman emperor, This is back in the time when religion and politics weren't exactly separate. Let's put it that way. So the emperor ordered, hey, I want Father John to be taken to Constantinople, and I want him to be the next bishop. But here's the problem. He was such a popular preacher in his home city of Antioch that the authorities are like, if we try to take this guy away, there's going to be a riot. The people simply will not have it. So, okay, we got to do this under cover of darkness. So everything was kept hush-hush, and it was kind of a ruse. What they did was they invited St. John Chrysostom and said, listen, how would you like to give a special homily and celebrate Mass at this really nice little chapel outside of Constantinople? It's a charming, charming little hamlet. It's a bed and breakfast situation. You can come there, get some rest, you know, kind of preach a homily. We want to hear your preaching because you're awesome. And then you can just say Mass for a few little people here. And then, hey, you can go back home. And he's like, yeah, that sounds great. That sounds awesome. I could use a bit of a break. So anyways, that's not exactly what the plan was. So he did go there, and they're like, hey, can you just like step into this carriage for a second? It's like a car door opens, and then, you know, this hand motions out for you to get in. And so he's like, okay. So he goes into the carriage, and then he's basically kidnapped, and he is taken by force to the capital of the East, which is known as Constantinople. And so, kind of against his will, he was consecrated as the bishop in the year 398, early in that year. Now, Constantinople was, I don't know how to describe it. It would be like New York, Milan, London, all the hot spots, L.A., every possible glamour town you could think of, all rolled into one. The Kardashians would have moved there if it were, you know, Vegas. Think about Vegas on steroids. That's exactly what Constantinople was. So that's where he was, and that's where this simple guy who wanted to be a monk out in the desert, who was this great preacher, that's where he was set up to lead the church. Now, there's a lot of political intrigue here going on because the great Roman emperor, he was one of the best of all time, Theodosius, he was actually called Theodosius the Great. He had just died just a couple years before that, back in 395, and he was the one who really, almost like just by sheer force of will, got the Nicene Creed to be adopted by everybody in the empire, got rid of, you know, really tried to stamp out the heresy of Arius, who tried to say that Jesus wasn't God. He's like, no, get rid of this. We got to have the Nicene Creed. That's what it's all about. This is the truth. So he died, Theodosius, and he had two sons who took over for him. And that doesn't always go well. Think about the sons of Herod the Great. Well, he had two sons, the sons of Emperor Theodosius. Their names were Honorius, Honorius and Arcadius. Well, both of them were like total disasters. So Arcadius was basically in charge of the East. That included Constantinople, the capital city of the East. So he was supposed to be in charge of that, but he wasn't really in charge. The guy who was really pulling all the strings was the palace chamberlain. You know, you got to watch out for the palace chamberlain. He's always kind of rubbing his hands together. What kind of evil can I come up to? So his name was Eutropius. So he was like kind of the power behind the throne. He was always kind of pulling the strings behind the scenes. And so he used his powers to basically put himself in great position to enrich himself, to enrich his buddies. And the empress, the wife of Arcadius, her name was Eudoxia. So she was like, listen, this guy has too much power. My husband's really supposed to be in charge here, not you. And this guy, the palace chamberlain, Eutropius, you know, he was saying to himself, you know what? The truth of the matter is that little do you know, but you wouldn't even be the empress if it wasn't for me, because he was the guy who, he was the matchmaker. Timmery's pal, Christina Pineta from Matchmakers in the City. That's basically what he did. He set up the matchmaking. He had arranged her marriage to Arcadius. So he's like, basically, listen, I got you here. I put you on the throne here. So at any rate, that's the kind of situation that was going on here. It's like a soap opera. And to make matters worse, there was a guy named Patriarch Theophilus of Alexandria, and he did not want John Chrysostom to be the bishop of Constantinople. He wanted one of his buddies to be the bishop, but he got turned down. So he was really angry about that. He's going to come up later. So at any rate, whether or not John Chrysostom knew that any of this stuff was going on behind the scenes, if he did know, he wouldn't have cared anyways, because he just kind of spoke the truth. He always laid it out there. He never minced his words, and he was absolutely livid at the materialism, the betrayal of the gospel, the luxurious living that was going on in the city. It just made him sick to his stomach. It's a little bit like when St. Paul went to Athens in Acts chapter 17. And as he's walking around the city and he sees the idolatry, the text tells us that he literally got sick to his stomach. Like, it just, he just wanted to throw up. He was just so disgusted by it all. And so that's exactly what St. John Chrysostom set out to do, to set things right. So job number one, he had to make sure the priests were actually trying to live for Christ, and they weren't. A lot of the priests there who had taken vow of celibacy, they were living with ladies, and they were called their quote-unquote spiritual sisters. That's what they called, oh, this is my spiritual sister. Well, let's put it to you this way, they weren't exactly living as brother and sister. Let's just leave it there. Pretty scandalous, folks. And so that was a problem, clearly. Other priests had become quite wealthy. And how they got that way, it's kind of might be tied up with the next problem, is that the finances of the church, the finances of the Archdiocese of Constantinople, if you will, were in a total disaster. They were in shambles. And so people were not getting spiritual care. They weren't being looked after. It was all debauchery. So first thing John did, he said, the spiritual sisters, got to get out. Okay, so they have to move out. They're gone. Priests, stick to your vow of celibacy. You have to live a life of austerity. You cannot be indulging in this sort of intoxicating, materialistic life. So he set up sort of accountants who would look after the coffers of the church, made sure the church finances were in order. Luxury items in the bishop's palace, like his jet ski and his yacht, they were sold in order to feed the hungry. The clergy were told to open the church so that people could come in and pray, because the rich people were kind of on a different schedule. Wealthy people had, you know, there were certain hours that they were available, and the church was only open for them. St. John Chrysostom said, nope, the working man, the working woman, they can come in and pray whenever they want. So you got to open up the churches. So we want that. We want people praying. I don't know if they had Eucharistic adoration, but that would have been cool too. So he really ticked off a lot of people. A lot of people respected him for what he did. Clearly, he was a hero to many, but he made a lot of very powerful enemies. So here's a quote from one of his sermons at the time. This is what the golden mouth, St. John Chrysostom, said. He said, the gold bit on your horse, the gold circlet on the wrist of your slave. Now, it was an unfortunate reality that slavery was a fact of life at that point. We'll have to deal with that on another program. The gilding on your shoes, all of these things mean that you are robbing the orphan and starving the widow. When you have passed away, each passerby who looks upon your great mansion will say, how many tears did it take to build that mansion? How many orphans were stripped? How many widows were wronged? How many laborers deprived of their honest wages? Even death itself will not deliver you from your accusers, end of quote. He's a pretty fiery preacher, right? So not many people would preach like that to a crowd like this who were powerful and wealthy, and they didn't like it. They didn't like it one bit. By the way, where did this all take place? The Cathedral Church of Constantinople was the famous Hagia Sophia. It's now known as the Hagia Sophia. Back then, it was called the Church of Saint Sophia, the largest church in the Christian world. So remember the guy who actually made St. John Chrysostom bishop, Eutropius, the palace chamberlain, the guy who's kind of, you know, rubbing his hands together behind the scenes, pulling the strings. Well, he thought that when John became bishop, that he was going to get all kinds of special favors. He was going to get all kinds of, I don't know what he was expecting, power, money, influence, I don't know. But it quickly became very clear John wasn't going to do that. John said, hey, Eutropius, you need to repent and believe in the gospel just like everybody else. You need to change your life. He didn't want to do that. But he did change his mind about whether he liked John. He said, no, I got to get rid of this guy. So this is, again, how St. John Chrysostom, he never gave in to human respect. What will they say? What will they think? He only cared about what God thought of him and trying to fulfill his vocation. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Well, eventually, this guy Eutropius, he was on such a power trip, he tried to attack some people. He tried to imprison these people. So they all ran into the Church of St. Sophia, the Hagia Sophia. And so he sent some soldiers after them, but Bishop St. John Chrysostom said, you know, this is a sanctuary. This church is a sanctuary. You cannot arrest these people. And eventually, this could have been a war. This could have been an absolute riot. There were mobs that were demanding vengeance. Eventually, St. John Chrysostom stood in front of the mob and said, "You can't do this. You can't attack these people." So he had a lot of principle. This is a principled man, a man who absolutely stood his ground, both literally and physically as well. So he defended their lives. And eventually, what happened later, this bad guy, Eutropius, eventually the mob turned on him. He ran into the church. He's like, "You got to save me now." And John Chrysostom could have easily just thrown him to the wolves, but he did the same thing that he did for the others. He said, "No, this church is a place of sanctuary. You deserve protection as well. Even though you're my enemy, I'm going to protect you." So he protected him. And anyways, unfortunately, here's what happened to Eutropius in the end. He said, "I'm not safe here. This church, it's not going to hold up. The mob's going to break through the defenses." So he actually ran out of the church. He was captured and killed by some folks. So that was his nasty end. At any rate, I'll just finish up what happened with St. John Chrysostom. The emperor's wife, remember her? Eudoxia. She was living pretty high on the hog herself, and she did not like the fact that he would preach against materialism. He would preach against abuses of power. And whenever she went to Mass, she felt like everybody was looking at her during the homily. And so she's like, "Yeah, maybe he can change his preaching a little bit." So she tried to make all these gifts to the church. "Hey, here's some money for the building fund." And he was like, "Oh, great. That's awesome. Thank you so much." But St. John Chrysostom didn't change a word of his preaching. She was essentially trying to bribe him. And this is what happens sometimes when, you know, large donors think, "Hey, if I give a certain amount of money, I can control the message." And no. So St. John Chrysostom was very, very stringent on the gospel. Well, eventually, this woman got him arrested on trumped-up charges. They were very ridiculous. None of them were true. And they said, basically, "We're going to deport you. We are going to put you in exile." And he could have fought against this. St. John Chrysostom could have fought against this. It would have started a riot if he had said, "No, this is unjust. You got to rally to my cause." But to his credit, he was a lover of peace, and he said, "No, I don't want to start a fight. I don't want bloodshed. I'll just simply go into exile." So he surrendered to the authorities. There was still a riot. There was still a mutiny because people were so upset that he was going to be sent away. There were lots of fighting. Some people did die. The army was so unpopular for putting him into exile, they didn't dare show themselves in public. There was an earthquake, and a lot of people thought, "Oh, man, this is a sign of divine justice. We shouldn't have sent John Chrysostom away." And in fact, because of all this stuff, Eudoxia herself, the empress, said, "Okay, I was wrong. I made a mistake. Please come back." So he did. And people sort of, "He's back," and shouts of acclamation. It was wonderful. But again, he still had enemies, and they put him into exile again, and he went along with it again. And unfortunately, this time it was going to be a little bit more permanent. He went to a remote village. He was kind of preached. He was put in exile in the remote village of Cucasus. I don't know where that is exactly, but he started writing. He couldn't preach, so he took up the pen. The golden mouth picked up the quill and started writing. And he wrote to the Pope, Pope Innocent. He said, "Okay, I got to fight for this guy." The authorities were criticized. The emperor was criticized for having put into exile, and that didn't work, though. Unfortunately, Chrysostom was ordered into exile even farther away. They sent him to a very cold, very remote village on the shore of the Black Sea. And in fact, the soldiers who brought him there, they knew he was getting older. They knew he was getting weak. They knew he was sick. And so they basically marched him and made him really, really tired on the journey and treated him very harshly physically. And eventually, he just got really, really ill. And before he died, he said, "Look, please take me to this tiny parish church by the road." And he did, and he received the Eucharist. It turned out to be his viaticum, his last Eucharist. He said goodbye, and before he died, he said one last thing. The great golden mouth, he preached one last little homily. It was the shortest one, but it was maybe his most eloquent one. He said, "In all things, glory to God, amen." And then he passed away. So there you go. That was the life of St. John Chrysostom, a very powerful example of not giving in to human respect, of standing your ground, of speaking truth to power, the truth of the gospel. And in that way, of course, followed in the footsteps of his Lord and Master, Jesus Christ, who did the exact same thing. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. If you want to call in, 888-914-9149. Did you ever have a friend or family member who tried to resist or stop the call of God in your life? I want to hear about that. And I'll share with you a little bit about these wild problems in life, this really cool new book that I'm reading. And I think you'll really enjoy a little anecdote about, of all people, Charles Darwin. He had a big problem in life. Should I get married or not? This is one of the wild problems that we sometimes face. And what he did was absolutely hilarious. I'll share that with you after the break. 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Be right back. The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters Flexible Premium Life Insurance. For less than $12 a month, a 40-year-old can get $500,000 of coverage. Go to relevantradio.com/forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
And welcome back. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. And I'll tell you, it was a top gun in the pulpit. It was St. John Chrysostom, the Golden Mouth's feast day today. Let's go to the phones right now. Paul is calling from Youngstown, Ohio. Hey, Paul, welcome back.
Hi, Cale. I wondered if maybe you had a church near you where you could occasionally take in a liturgy of St. John Chrysostom. I attend one, and I rather like it. There's no guitar, no organ, so there's no competition between, you know, like a modern mass or a Latin mass.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very relaxing, and I learn the liturgy that way. Kind of it's kind of sung or chanted.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I haven't. And for those who might not know, Paul's a regular listener and caller. He's from an Orthodox Christian background. And so, yeah, in the Orthodox churches of the East, there is a liturgy of St. John Chrysostom. I have not participated in that. But a few years ago, I went to the Eucharistic Congress. And this is kind of like the Olympics for the Catholic Church. You know how the Olympics happen every 4 years? Well, every 4 years, there's a Eucharistic Congress somewhere in the world. And people come from all over the place to talk about the Eucharist. And I went to the one that was in Quebec City, Canada in 2008, I believe it was. Yeah, 2008. And it was, well, it seems like yesterday, but it was, I remember Tiger Woods won the U.S. Open on a broken leg that year. And that actually happened while I was there. I was watching it in the hotel room. But I did get a chance to participate in an Eastern Catholic liturgy. I think it was a Byzantine Catholic liturgy. And I found it very moving, very powerful. So unique, so different. It just is almost like a different universe that you're entering into. And so I thought it was cool. I really did. I really did think it was neat. And I hope I get to attend another one in the future. So it's definitely, obviously the Eastern rites of the Catholic Church are very much like, liturgically, very much like the divine liturgies of the Orthodox churches of the East. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. And thanks for our call, Paul. And I do want to talk about this intriguing book. I mentioned this off the top that I'm reading right now. And I've actually finished the book now, but I want to reread it. And it's good. Books that you really like, books that really speak to you, it's a good idea to go back to them every once in a while, because you always get fresh insights, new insights that hit you a little bit differently and kind of double down on stuff that works for you, I guess you could say. I'm also a big proponent of, I wasn't always this way, because I had the mindset of you've got to finish what you start. There, if a book is really boring, or if it's not speaking to you, if you're not getting anything out of it, move on. There's so many other books out there. Your time is limited. If it's not working for you, it's okay to pull the chute. It's okay. Give yourself permission to do that. But this is not one of these books. I know I'm going to be coming back to this book time and time again. Wild Problems. It's a book by Russ Roberts. And I hadn't heard about Russ Roberts, but he hosts a very, very popular podcast called Econ Talk. And it's all about economics. I'll have to check it out. He's also written another book called How Adam Smith Can Change Your Life. Adam Smith is the father of modern economics. And if you don't know who that is, but Russ Roberts, yeah. So I heard about this book through Joel Miller's wonderful Substack email newsletter, and you can sign up for it as well. It's called Miller's Book Review. He's turned me on to a lot of cool books that I normally would not have found if it wasn't for him. So Joel J. Miller, he's written a book himself about Paul Revere. Works for a very interesting company called Full Focus in Nashville. And anyway, so I'd encourage you to check out Miller's Book Review. Just Google that. You'll find it on Substack. And that's where I found out about this book, Wild Problems. And it really kind of spoke to me because when it comes to our faith, clearly, when people ask the question, what is God's will for my life? Sometimes it's easy to answer that because there's what we would call the universal will of God for all people, and that would include things like the Ten Commandments. They're binding on everybody, all times, all places. But what about the particular will of God? That's sometimes a little bit more tricky. So if you think God's calling you to marriage, for example, St. John Chrysostom, he was called to become a monk and then eventually became a priest and a bishop. He was kidnapped to become a bishop, so that call was experienced a little differently for him, for sure, but let's say that you're called, not called that, let's say you're called to the vocation of marriage. Well, then the question becomes, well, who should I marry? That can be a wild problem. That's the kind of thing that Russ Roberts talks about in his book. And so, now, he doesn't come at this necessarily from a religious perspective. He doesn't talk about the particular will of God or anything like that. But he kind of starts off the book by talking about having a walk with one of his friends, a walk and a talk. And at that point, this guy, Russ Roberts' friend, was struggling with whether or not he should have a child with his wife. Now, obviously, from a Catholic perspective, it's kind of the default position, openness to life, if God wills it. But he obviously was coming from a secular perspective. He's like, should I do this? He kind of made this cost-benefit analysis, this list of pros and cons. Should I have a kid? Should I not have a kid? They cost so much money. There was just a thing that came out in the news the other day. The average child costs something like well over $250,000 or something like that. I can't remember what the number was to raise that child. So he's going through all these numbers and he asks his buddy Russ Roberts, hey, what do you think? And he said, well, you don't have a child because it's quote unquote worth it. That's not how you should look at this at all, because before you have a kid, you think about there's certain costs to this. Okay, I'm not going to have as much time to play golf or whatever the case may be, or I'm going to have to spend money on, of course, feeding this child, clothing this child, educating this child. You're not necessarily thinking about what the benefits might be. There are great benefits to becoming a parent. So it might, now again, this person's looking at it from a totally secular point of view. Don't forget, from a totally secular, rational point of view, it might not make any sense. It might even seem very irrational to want to become a parent. But once you become a parent, it's a totally different ball game. And a lot of people will say their whole life is kind of defined by being a parent. How I experience life is keyed to this. As one writer said, your children are your heart outside of your body. That's a wonderful phrase. And so that's an example of a kind of wild problem, but there are other types of problems that we have in life, and sometimes we don't know which path to take. It's like that old poem, that classic poem by Robert Frost, "The Road Not Taken." We don't necessarily know which path is the best one, and sometimes we don't know until we get there, until we get to the destination, and that would, of course, be the future. So what happens is when we face these difficult problems in life, we don't know what to do. That leads to indecision, and then it eventually leads to procrastination. We delay making a decision, and we think, oh, if we just ignore it, it might go away. But it's not going to go away. It's not going to go away. But there are certain decisions that we have to make. We do have to make them. Data, science, we live in an age of big data, and we think if we just get the right data, we can make the right decisions. Some decisions that we make defy that kind of approach. So Russ Roberts, now, as you might know, because as you might have guessed, if he's the host of Econ Talk and the author of How Adam Smith Can Change Your Life, he was trained as an economist at the University of Chicago. And he was basically taught, as he explains in the book, that economics is the guide to making rational choices in life. There's something called opportunity cost. If you choose one thing, that means you're giving up doing something else. Everything has a price. Everything involves giving up something to have another thing. Nothing is of infinite value. That's the way economists talk, okay? But he says, Russ Roberts says, when it comes to big decisions of life, thinking like that can lead you way, way off track. So data can't solve all your problems. So here's some examples of tame problems as opposed to these wild problems. So here's a tame problem. How do you get to Chicago from New York City? There are a few ways you can do that. You can take an Uber. That might cost you a pretty penny by the time that's done. You can try hitchhiking. You might not make it. You could walk. That's kind of slow going. You could fly. That's probably the quickest way to do it. So that's a tame problem, right? There's a roadmap kind of laid out. Okay, there's that's pretty measurable for you. But here's a wild problem: whether or not to go to Chicago in the first place. Okay, that's a different question. So he lays out a few examples of this. Russ Roberts in his book Wild Problems. Here's a tame problem: how do you make an omelet? Here's a wild problem: how do you write Hamlet? Okay, that's not so easy. A tame problem, landing on the moon. Well, it might not seem so tame, but there's a way to do it. Physics, rockets, we got it. Maybe we can call Elon, he can send us a rocket. Here's a wild problem, parenting. It's less of a science and more of an art form, isn't it? Here's a tame problem, how do you make your battery life on your cell phone last longer? Well, here's a wild problem, how do you choose the right career? So it's not always so simple, is it? Choice. Options. They give us potential, but they also can be, they can almost paralyze us. What do we do? There's no map to tell us where to go for certain big questions of life. So I found this book really intriguing, and one of the chapters is about a dilemma that, of all people, Charles Darwin faced. And it was basically this. Darwin asked, should I get married or not? And so he did what a lot of people do when they have a big decision to make. He sort of laid out a list of pros and cons. Now, this doesn't sound very romantic. I will say this. If you're of a romantic bent, you will not find Charles Darwin your guy. So here's what it came down to in the end. So he had pluses of marriage and minuses of marriage. So here's some of the pluses that he listed. Companionship, okay? An object to be played with, a step up from a dog. Oh, well, please don't say that. If you do choose to ask someone to marry you, don't make that your part of your, you drop down on one knee, don't say that. Okay, so Charles, you're already off base here. The charms of music, you know, like maybe your wife could play the piano or your husband, whatever. And this is Darwin's list. This is not mine. Whether or not to get married. Pluses of marriage, female chit chat. Okay. Having children to take care of you in old age. Maybe I would have better health if my wife kept me from working too obsessively. Someone to take care of the house. That's so patriarchal. I can't believe he said that. That was Darwin, all right? So then he also had a list of cons, if you will, for getting married. And here were his cons. It was a longer list than the pros. Number one, I might have to leave London. Number two, loss of autonomy. I can't just do whatever I want. No clever conversation with men in clubs. I can't go to the local granite club and sit around and smoke cigars with the guys because I'll have responsibilities. Wasting time visiting my wife's relatives. Oh, I don't know if he's looking at this the right way. The expense of children. They're just expensive. The anxiety that comes from being a parent. Children, oh, they might get into all kinds of problems. It might make me, what's going to happen to them? I'm anxious. General anxiety from family responsibility. No time for reading in the evening. And his last point, might have to get a real job to support family. Okay, so Charles Darwin, that was his list of pros and cons, whether or not he should get married. And so in the book, Russ Roberts imagines himself being invited over to Darwin's home for a late night drink and a conversation, and he wants advice on whether or not to do it. Now, don't forget, Darwin's a guy who, when he went on his famous voyage on the HMS Beagle, he wrote 770 pages in his diary. He took 1,750 pages of notes, and he cataloged over 5,436 examples of skins, bones, and carcasses of different animals. Okay, so Russ Roberts says, okay, when it comes to this question of marriage, how do I tell this guy, how do I tell Charles Darwin, of all people, that he hasn't gathered enough data? Because here's the problem. You can't imagine what marriage is going to be like until you're actually married. You can't do it because you have to have the experiential knowledge, which you're not going to get unless you do it. So you can imagine what it might be like to be married, but Darwin has no access to the inner life of a married person, what the upside might be. And so he's got all kinds of ideas about it. I won't have time to smoke cigars with my friends. So he's not looking at it the right way. So anyways, this is an intriguing book. I'd encourage you, if you're interested in this topic, pick it up. It's called Wild Problems by Russ Roberts. And I'll have more to say about this in future episodes of the show, because there's a lot of cool stuff in here. But that was an intriguing thought, that sometimes you do have to take a bit of a leap of faith in life and look at life as more, not as a problem to be solved, but as a mystery to be explored and savored, as Russ Roberts says. So, by the way, if you're wondering what Darwin did in the end, he actually did get married, and he was very happy. He was very happy in the end, and there you have it. So he did do it. He did do it. He made the plunge. He took the leap of faith. And that's what we have to do as well. We have to take a leap of faith in the direction that the evidence is pointing when it comes to Catholicism. And I think that's true when it comes to other big decisions in life, too. So I hope you've enjoyed the show today. It's been the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. It's been a slice. Jim Schaefer produced. Patrick Alog took your phone calls. If you missed any part of the show, of course, you can get the podcast on relevantradio.com. I want to say that our Exodus series is going to be debuting this week on Relevant Radio on the Faith Explained show, so please keep your eyes peeled for that. And don't forget, at some point this week, hopefully tomorrow, I think it's going to be tomorrow, but stay tuned, Patrick Madrid is going to be joining me to talk about his brand new book, Inquisition, live on the Cale Clark Show. Hey, listen, Tim Rees up next. Stay tuned for that, followed by, of course, Father Rocky and the Family Rosary across America. Have a great night, everybody. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.